I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Gabriel Cousins, physician, mystic, rabbi, and author of the new spiritual autobiography, Into the Nothing. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on Two Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. Two Jewish is paid for by Two Jewish Radio Programs and Podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. There was a particularly peculiar set of moments during the second impeachment trial of Donald Trump in the U.S. Senate about 10 days ago. One of his attorneys, David Schoen, whenever he took a sip of water on the first day of the trial, would cover his head with his hand. It provoked a great deal of commentary in the Twitterverse, and the fact emerged that Schoen is an Orthodox Jew. While it's important in Orthodox Judaism to cover your head when you eat or drink, it's actually most common today for men to wear a yarmulke or kippah all the time, not just when eating or drinking. And on the second day of the trial, Schoen did just that, wearing a black kippah the whole time. When asked why he had been covering his head with his hand on the first day, instead of just wearing a yarmulke, as he usually does, Schoen answered that he didn't want to offend anyone, wasn't sure that it was appropriate to wear one in the U.S. Senate chamber. Apparently, he got over those concerns and wore his kippah after that. Which raises a number of interesting questions about freedom of religion, protected in the same First Amendment of the Bill of Rights as freedom of speech is, actually prior to it. The First Amendment reads, "Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances." Since Schoen's argument defending Trump was largely based on First Amendment claims, it seems peculiar that he would feel uncomfortable demonstrating his own religious right to self-expression in the very home of the Constitution. In any case, after an especially weird field day of social media on the subject, he changed his mind and wore his yarmulke. Now, you should know that the public wearing of the yarmulke or kippah, sometimes referred to as a skull cap, isn't so long established in America as you might think. In fact, people who are old enough can remember when even Orthodox Jews did not wear yarmulkes in public, only putting them on when they entered a synagogue or house of study or in the privacy of their own homes. Some of this was because the wearing of yarmulkes in public had never been a particular requirement of Jewish law. Some of it was because all men wore hats or caps in public until around the second half of the 20th century. Another factor was the prevalence of bigotry and anti-Semitism in America, and the desire of Jews to blend in as part of a predominantly immigrant generation looking to be part of the great melting pot of America. The public wearing of kippot in the United States didn't really become common, even among Orthodox Jews, until after World War II, with the increase in the public acceptance of Judaism as a kind of acceptable third faith of America, along with Protestant Christianity and Catholicism, and the pride American Jews felt about the declaration of the State of Israel in 1948. Public kippah wearing didn't become acceptable among conservative Jews and Reform rabbis until even later, the 60s, 70s, even the 80s. Still, in the year 2021, the public wearing of yarmulkes by an Orthodox Jew, lawyer for the former president or not, is very unlikely to provoke much surprise or negative commentary. Who did Schoen think he was fooling into not believing he is Jewish by leaving his head bare except when he drank from his water glass. Which brings us to the coming holiday of Purim. Beginning Thursday night, continuing to Friday this coming week, Purim is the silliest Jewish holiday of the year, of course, and it reminds us that masks used to be worn for costuming, not medical protection. Purim's a joyous festival, but it's also a sharp reminder about both the temporary advantages and the dangers of hiding our Jewish identities. The Purim festival is based on the events of the Book of Esther in the Hebrew Bible, the Tanakh. The Megillat Esther, or Scroll of Esther, will chant the whole scroll of Purim, the entire one, on the holiday, hence the phrase, the whole Megillah. The essence of the story is that in the days when Jews lived in the great Persian Empire, some 2,500 years ago, an evil counselor to King Ahasuerus, perhaps Artaxerxes IV, named Haman, tries to have all the Jews of the Persian Empire killed. That was all the Jews in the world back then, more or less. The plot of the story is complicated. Another one of the principal advisors to the Persian king is a Jew named Mordechai. He is publicly known for being a Jew. He probably wore his yarmulke all the time in public, even in the equivalent of the Persian Senate chamber, and this makes him an easy target for Haman's plot. Now, this Mordechai has a niece or young cousin named Esther, a beautiful young woman, an orphan in his charge. When the king kicks out his wife Vashti and runs a beauty contest to find her successor, Mordechai directs Esther to enter the contest. He also tells her to hide the fact that she is a Jew. Esther wins the contest, becoming the new queen. When I tell you that I am simplifying the story a good deal and summarizing and skipping entire sections, you'll get some idea just how convoluted this whole tale is. In any case, at the climax of the Megillah, when Haman is about to murder all the Jews of the Persian Empire and steal all their possessions, Mordechai pushes Esther to reveal to the king that she herself is a Jew, and that Haman's plot would kill her as well. This big reveal dooms Haman, saves the Jews, and ensures we all go home from Purim celebrations happy. Haman is convicted, executed. Mordechai and Esther are fated, and we eat, drink, and rejoice. But remember, a key plot point of the Megillah is that Esther hides her Judaism throughout most of the story and has to be prodded by Mordechai to save her people. Mind the irony. It was Mordechai himself who told her to conceal her Judaism in the first place. Anyway, at the climax of the story, after a tough conversation with Mordechai, in which he literally tells Esther, "Don't think you can keep hiding your Jewish identity. They'll find out and kill you too." Esther finally agrees to tell King Ahasuerus that she is a member of the people of Israel and her life too is endangered. Rather than kill her, the king instead kills Haman and the others who seek to destroy the Jews. And we rejoice, eat Hamantaschen, the tasty cookie named after the villain, and drink and sing. All of these events happened 2.5 millennia ago, some 2,500 years in the past, if they really happened, which demonstrates that it has long been tricky for Jews to be known as Jews in the many non-Jewish societies in which we only had a borderline level of safety or acceptance at best. Trump lawyer Schoen's reluctance last week to announce his Jewishness with a kippah on the floor of the Senate thus comes from a long and rich history of Jews trying to pass, to pretend to be, well, not Jewish in circumstances in which it might be disadvantageous to reveal their religious identity. I would hope that this natural tendency in America, at least, had faded in an era when Drake is Jewish, Tiffany Haddish is Jewish, Mark Zuckerberg is Jewish, when 12 of the 100 U.S. senators judging Trump were Jewish, including the majority leader. When plenty of super high-ranking politicians, judges, celebrities, and business movers and shakers and athletes are Jewish. And nobody makes much of that fact, well, except maybe us here at Too Jewish. But apparently, there's still some Esther left in us, and it still requires a, dare I say it, leap of faith for people to self-identify as Jews in distinctly goyish surroundings. May that tendency continue to fade and even disappear, and in this season of Purim, may we all be proud to affirm our Jewish identity under all circumstances. To play us in this morning, here's a Purim parody song, admittedly cute rather than great, but charming indeed. It's called The Haman Song, with thanks to the Muppets. Listen for the chanting of the 10 sons of Haman during this song, who all get offed, by the way, in the Megillah, in the later sections.
Why are there so many songs about Haman when we should be blotting his name? Haman's a villain, the worst one in Shushan. He made Mussolini look tame. His childhood idols were all genocidal. He'd kill on a brief passing whim. But someday we'll blot out the Haman remembrance and stop dressing kids up like him. Di-da-di-di-da-di-dee. This year let's all keep our shirts on. Have we been half asleep? And have we heard Gregor's? They're spinning around in my brain. We've tried to drown him out for thousands of years now, and maybe gone kind of insane. We've heard it too many times to ignore it in parodies tasteless and flat. But someday we'll blot out the Haman remembrance. Vet Parshandata, vet Alfon, vet Asvata, vet Purata, vet Adalia, vet Aridata, vet Parmashta, vet Arisai, vet Aridai, vet Vaizata. And stop baking treats like his hat. Lie-da-di-di-di-di-di-di. Die, 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 die.
That was the Purim song parody with thanks to cantor Michael Smolash. When we return on Too Jewish in a moment, our guest, Gabriel Cousins, college football hero, physician, mystic, rabbi, and the author of a new spiritual autobiography, Into the Nothing, joins us from Israel. Meet him when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun, a place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol. The best games in town, amazing dining, and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball, Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
Congregation Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a new Jewish synagogue in northwest Tucson in the Catalina foothills, celebrates a great array of services, classes, and events this winter and spring. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha has created a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. A new progressive congregation in northwest Tucson and the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the Tucson metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Beit Simcha's synagogue is located at 2270 West Ina Road, the north side of Ina, just west of La Cholla, near the entrance to the Foothills Mall property in our own building. Services, classes, and events are open to everyone in normal times. In these days of coronavirus Tsoros, small groups join us in person Friday night and Saturday morning. Email me, rabbi@beitsimchatucson.org, BEITSIMCHA Tucson.org. or join us every Friday night and this Thursday night for Purim on our Facebook page. Shabbat evening celebration services are at 6:30 p.m. Saturday morning services are at 10 a.m., all with me leading them. Facebook page is Beit Simcha Tucson, Beit Simcha Tucson. Our services are held with full music by Virtual Experience Weekly, as well as in-person, masked, and careful attendees. All of our Adult Education Academy classes are on Zoom. You can access those by emailing us, rabbi@beitsimchatucson.org. Many of those classes, as well as our wonderful religious school and Torah Tykes programs, are available in blended formats as well, some people live, some on Zoom. For more information about Congregation Beit Simcha to attend services, our great religious school and Torah Tykes program, bar and bat mitzvah, confirmation, and high school programs, and rich array of Adult Education Academy courses, all taught on Zoom as well as in blended format, and of course all of our services on Facebook Live, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 276-5675. BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in the newest Jewish community in southern Arizona in its exciting beginning years. Join us for Purim this Thursday night, 6:30 p.m. on our Facebook page. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit our website at 2JewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through our website, 2JewishRadio.com, streaming us from there or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store's very popular Jewish podcasts. Top 10 in North America, according to Moment Magazine, with over 100,000 downloads on Podbean. We are delighted to welcome to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Gabriel Cousins is originally a physician, a mystic. He was a football star and has taken a fascinating path to holistic medicine and what he calls spiritual liberation. He's the author of a new book, Into the Nothing, a Spiritual Autobiography. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Good morning. I'm very happy to be here on this program, having just moved to Israel from Patagonia, Arizona. So this is really a home base. So it's really fun to be sharing.
Nice to have you back, at least by radio. Tell us what prompted you to write the, well, you call it a spiritual autobiography, but it's an autobiography. Tell us about what prompted you to write this now.
At the age of 77, I thought it was time to share the mystical and spiritual journey that I have been on. That's what prompted me. You got a little voice, little hush mouth, says, you know, it's time to do this. So that actually is as simple as that. I have written 13 other books, mostly with nutrition and spirituality. I also wrote Torah as a Guide to Enlightenment, where I went through all the parshas, interpreting it from a sod level. Of understanding, like I'll call upper soul, lower soul. I call Kabbalah upper soul is direct spiritual understanding. So it was time to do that, and that's why.
I want to talk a little bit about your path. You came, I don't know exactly back or into Judaism. You studied for many years to become a rabbi, but after taking other spiritual paths and then integrating them, tell us what prompted you to dig deeper into Kabbalah and to explore your Judaism in that way.
Okay, so I was raised Reform at North Shore Congregation of Israel in Glencoe, Illinois, Rabbi Siskin. And I was particularly close to a Rabbi Lippis from a conservative temple. He and I were really close. And he said, you need to become a rabbi. I said, no, I still have to keep playing football and living. I have certain things that have to be done. So that's a key. I knew that even as a you know, young teenager. I knew I was going to be rabbi, but I also knew I had to play football. I had to become a medical doctor. I just, there was a sense that that's how I'd call it, you know, mazal, so, a sense that this had to be done first. So I walked with that sense. I went to Amherst College in Amherst, Massachusetts, where I was the captain of an undefeated football team, went to Columbia Medical School, had a chance to meet Abraham Joshua Heschel, who was teaching the Jewish Theological Seminary there in New York. So I always had an interest. I was also confirmed in the Reform. So I don't know, it was a class of 350 people, and I was the top student, and I just loved it, to be honest. So I always had a feeling for it. That's the key. But it wasn't getting me to where I needed to go spiritually. I just knew I need to go deeper, and I wasn't having access to going deeper for some whatever the reason was. So I began looking into other areas and then completed it. I did live in India for 7 years, but when I came back, I did a 40-day fast, okay? And at the end of the 40th day, a little Hashem rang out and said, you need to go to your roots. I'm 40 years old, and I was always practicing in a Reform mode. I was always doing Shabbat. I was doing holidays. I never really left Judaism. But I just needed to find the spirit part of it. So, what do you have to listen to the Word of God? I mean, that's how I live my life. That's what I explain in the autobiography, is I always listen to the Word of God as it directed me. When I was 4, it said, you need to be a doctor. Okay. Nobody in my family had been doctors. My family's from Bialystok. They were bakers. I mean, it was a very different. So here I am, 40 years old, and I began to study. I began to read, you know, like the Me'olam Hatz, you know, the 21 volumes of mystical Judaism, and I just began to study. But I also began to study a Torah a lot. I still do study it on a very regular basis because it is every time I read it, it gets deeper.
I want to pick up your journey in a moment with Gabriel Cousins when we return on Too Jewish. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
So there you were drinking coffee at the Kurdish Cafe in Tucson, outdoors, of course, for safety, and things happened.
Right. So, proving once again that the Jewish world is very small, I go to this Kurdish cafe, I would say at least 5 times a week.
They have not only great dark coffee, but excellent pancakes, I might add.
Yeah, the best pancakes in town, as a matter of fact. So I'm sitting there the other day outside around 10 a.m. The sun is up. It's warm. I take off my jacket. And a family comes up to the window and stares at the menu for a while. And it was pretty clear they were from out of town, was their first time there. And I said, you know, you wouldn't guess it, but for a Kurdish restaurant, this place serves the best pancakes in town. If you like pancakes, I highly recommend them. So their ears perked up. They said, Kurdish? I said, yeah, the owner is a guy from Kurdistan who came to get a PhD at the University of Arizona and basically never left. And his wife is pretty much like an evangelical Christian, and his kids are kind of mixed. But one of them married a Jewish woman from El Paso. So their ears perked up for several reasons, this family. A, the guy wanted to go in and meet the boss and speak Kurdish with him. It turns out that this whole family had spent 4 years in Kurdistan, which is northern Iraq.
Oh, my goodness.
And he was a teacher at the British school or the American school or the international school, whatever it was there. And his wife was a researcher at the university. She's a university professor, PhD, whatever. And pure coincidence, the daughter is thinking about going to university in Mendoza, Argentina, one of my favorite cities in the world. So after getting the preliminaries out of the way, they come out with their food, he having enjoyed already a conversation in Kurdish with the boss and owner, and he stopped to talk a little bit more. It turned out there were a Jewish family from Seattle. The daughter had gone to the Seattle Hebrew Academy, and they were very interested in Jewish travel, Jewish books, whatever. So, of course, I told them about my podcast, and I also recommended to them Geraldine Brooks's People of the Book. Which and I know that
the
you're...
The story of the Sarajevo Haggadah,
right,
of course.
Right. It's not your favorite book, but it is one of mine.
Although she's a past guest of Two Jewish, but yes, go ahead.
Okay. So then this family went to sit down, and an older couple who'd been sitting close to my table the whole time perked up and said, "Well, we're from Indiana, but we've been skiing in Sarajevo." Huh? And it turns out that the year after the Olympics were held in Sarajevo, they went on a ski trip there. And they got stuck there because the airport was fogged in. So they went sightseeing and they visited the synagogue. They bought copies of the Sarajevo Haggadah. They have read the Geraldine Brooks book, probably as a result of their visit there. And they have nothing but the fondest memories of Sarajevo and Belgrade because they couldn't fly out of Sarajevo. The airport was fogged in. So the airline put all the passengers onto a train to Belgrade, then put them up in hotels for two or three nights, and then flew them on their nonstop flight to New York.
Well, it is a very small Jewish world. The Sarajevo Haggadah, of course, one of the great artistic creations back to really the Middle Ages, and it's been preserved. It's an incredible thing. Very small Jewish world indeed. Thanks, Tom. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie new, brought to you by Two Jewish as a public service. Two little old Jewish ladies are walking down the street, and Sadie says to Becky, "Becky, if you found $1 million lying in the gutter, what would you do?" And Becky answers, "If it belonged to a poor person, I would give it back." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Two Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week we read the portion of Tetzaveh in the book of Exodus, a ritually oriented parsha which gives the commandment to create a Ner Tamid, an eternal light for the tabernacle in the wilderness. That tabernacle was the first sanctuary of the people of Israel. Although technically speaking, the tabernacle, the Mishkan, was just a very elaborate portable tent, it was also the place where God's presence in the form of the Shekhinah resided. Last week in Truma, our ancestors were asked to create this sacred space through the voluntary gifts of their hearts. This week we're told that there should be a continual fire, a Ner Tamid, a constant light burning on the altar, a sign of God's faithful and permanent presence in our midst. Revealingly, that light is to be created and kindled by us, not God. We must build the altar and the fire and continue to feed and nurture it to keep it alive. If you have ever kept a fire burning around the clock, say at a campout or bonfire or for heat on a cold winter's night in some frigid clime, you know just how much fuel you need to do it. You are always either stoking it or bringing in more wood to burn. If neglected for any length of time, it burns out. The Ner Tamid was not just a symbol, but a process, requiring regular care and feeding to flourish. Our spiritual life is rather like that ancient Ner Tamid. If we wish God's presence to illuminate our lives, to give us warmth and comfort, then we too must feed our own Ner Tamid, must gently and regularly add spiritual fuel to the flame. Religious experiences, prayer, meditation, introspection, blessings, personal and communal rituals, time for breathing and allowing God into our lives, all of these help feed the fire, and they must be done with some regularity or our own internal eternal lights will go out. The Ner Tamid, that ancient light, is found today in every synagogue in the world, no matter how humble the shul or how grand the temple. While today we simply pay electric bills to keep it alive, even that requires a bit of our active participation. But its symbolic purpose is much greater. The Ner Tamid burns always to remind us that God is with us always, if we only take the time to feed our own spiritual fires regularly. When we return on To Jewish, our guest, Gabriel Cousins, explores his journey from college football hero to physician to mystic to rabbi, author to immigrant to Israel now. Find out about his latest chapter when we return on To Jewish in just a moment.
We continue with our To Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Dr. Anthony Fauci, America's top infectious disease specialist, was awarded $1 million prize from an Israeli foundation for courageously defending science in the face of uninformed opposition during the challenging COVID crisis. The Dan David Prize's award announcement last week did not mention former President Donald Trump, who sought to downplay the effects of the coronavirus during his time in office. It credited Fauci for speaking truth to power in a highly charged political environment. The prize is awarded by the Dan David Foundation, founded by the late Romanian-Israeli philanthropist of the same name. The award, split into three categories, past, present, and future, honors scientists, researchers, and cultural figures for achievement in their fields. Past winners range from former Vice President Al Gore to cellist Yo-Yo Ma. The Dan David Foundation also noted Fauci's work during the AIDS crisis, commending his exceptional contribution to HIV research in the 1980s and his time as the architect of the U.S. President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief. U.S. President Joe Biden called Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu nearly a month into Biden's term, a time frame that drew criticism from Republicans for the apparent delay. Biden appeared to make up for lost time, at least according to Netanyahu's Twitter account. The two spoke for about an hour. The conversation was friendly and warm, Netanyahu said in Hebrew, addressing an Israeli electorate that places a high value on healthy relations with the United States. Netanyahu's tweet, accompanied by a photo of him grinning on the phone, comes just weeks before yet another Israeli election. The two leaders remarked on their personal relationship of many years, said they will work together for the continuation and strengthening of the unshakable alliance between Israel and the United States, Netanyahu said. He also said they discussed advancing the peace deals, the Iranian threat, and challenges in the region. Biden has said that he would preserve the normalization agreements his predecessor Donald Trump brokered between Israel and the four Sunni Arab countries. The president also said that he wants to return to the Iran nuclear deal, which Netanyahu opposes. Netanyahu did not say whether they discussed Israeli-Palestinian relations. Biden wants to revive U.S.-Palestinian ties, which were cut off by Trump. The two men also discussed Israel's successful vaccination program to contain the coronavirus pandemic. Biden has come under fire by congressional Republicans for not immediately calling Netanyahu. Biden's spokeswoman said he was tackling an array of challenges and not ignoring Netanyahu. She also said the leaders had spoken after Biden's election in November. Israel's Ben-Gurion Airport reopened briefly late last week. 302 new immigrants from Ethiopia came in, including a 6-year-old boy in need of emergency heart surgery. The newcomers were taken to a 14-day confinement period, but the boy was quickly moved to a local hospital. The Ethiopians, among about 8,000 with Jewish ancestry awaiting immigration to Israel, been tested for COVID-19 in Gondar prior to arriving, according to the International Christian Embassy Jerusalem, the ICEJ, an evangelical group sponsoring their arrival and that had chartered the plane that brought them in. From Gondar, the immigrants traveled on buses for 12 hours to Addis Ababa before the 4-hour flight to Israel. Now their dreams have come true of finally reuniting with their families in the promised land, said ICEJ President Jürgen Bühler. We also have many Christians worldwide to thank for making this flight possible. Ben-Gurion Airport has been shuttered since January 26th as part of the Israeli government's attempts to curb the spread of coronavirus. These Ethiopians, known as Falash Mura, are widely believed to have converted to Christianity under duress while adhering to some Jewish traditions. Israel completed the airlifting of many other Ethiopian Jews, the Beta Israel, in the 1990s. I had the privilege of working with groups of Ethiopian Jews in Israeli absorption centers in 1992, shortly after their arrival. They are quite wonderful. The Israeli government has allowed the Falash Mura to immigrate under the country's law of return for Jews and their relatives. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world. We are delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Gabriel Cousins is many things, a physician, a rabbi, certainly a spiritual journeyer, an advocate of raw foods and nutrition, as well as many different mystical paths. You were describing your journey and how at 40 you picked Torah back up, but you'd always loved it. You'd always done Shabbat. How did you study it differently? Began to explore, I assume, Kabbalah.
It's an excellent question. So the difference was I had already had now some deep experience, spiritual experiences, deep spiritual awarenesses that I had gathered until the age of 40. Okay. And it was from that, and it was more, a little bit more in the Indian tradition, but other things too. So I already had been fed in a certain way. And then the 40-day fast was another awakening, as they say, but it was God's voice, to be honest with you. Okay? But because I had the spiritual background now, I could understand the deep teachings in Judaism, which are very sophisticated and very deep, and outlining the whole mystical path, you know, and really a path to Devikut Heirut, which I didn't even know those words existed. So that's God merging and enlightenment, okay? I didn't see that there was a path like that in Judaism. And so for me to directly experience it was absolutely wonderful. So with my eyes open, with my heart open in terms of deeper spiritual understandings, then I could read the Torah in a totally different way. My basic is Torah, more than Talmud. Okay, I could read it in a totally different way. And I thought, wow, they're talking about David Gooday Ruth. Nobody ever told me about that. And I was like, I studied pretty hard, you know, in my confirmation, you know, class. So that's how it unfolded for me. Then I found that the thing is that I also found, I didn't really find a rabbi who could really understand it until I met Rabbi Gerson Winkler. And I began studying with him pretty intensely. I also studied with other rabbis who were very orthodox. And right now, Mabel Modine, I was also Shlomo Carl Beck's medical doctor. So this is an Orthodox community in the living. It's very comfortable and easy because it fits with my experience with it. But the point that's most important that I want to make to the listeners and what I made to myself is I call it the Torah way. Okay, or the Great Torah Way, it is a complete path of liberation equal in the yogic world, the Taoist world, the Buddhist world, and maybe a little bit more sophisticated. I have to be careful because I don't like to compare paths, but I'm saying it's equal to or deeper than for a liberation, Devikut Heirut, than any path in the world.
So You were bar mitzvahed at 40. I want to just jump in a little bit. You were bar mitzvahed at the age of 44, because in the Reform movement, when you grew up, confirmation was the standard, not bar mitzvah.
That's right. As I said, I was a top student of the confirmation class.
Your Judaism is heavily infused with Kabbalah. Which aspect of Kabbalah, that is, which of the kind of various rooms of Kabbalah do you particularly prefer, or is it your own unique approach?
Well, I would say I'm not so involved with magical Kabbalah. I'm going to put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit more mystical Kabbalah, without naming everybody's names, but, you know, mystical Kabbalah. Very influenced by the Baal Shem Tov, Rabbi Nachman.
So Hasidic Kabbalah, you know, some of the early masters.
Hasidic Kabbalah, Hasidic, yeah. That's pretty much it. And I will say Shlomo Carlbach, as they say, I was his doctor, but I'm living in his community. And it's that kind of style.
Uh-huh.
A lot of dancing and singing and not as much. I do like Yitzhak, meditating in the field. I do a lot of meditating. And also like Avraham, who was also meditating in the fields of Mamre. So I'm going to share one other thing,
because it's
important to my experience. Is that, so when I took Aliyah in Israel 2007, a little slow getting every year full time, at 2000.
Yeah, it took 13, 14 years after you made Aliyah to actually move. I understand.
And then I meditated in a cave for 3 days without food and water, above Arad, and I could see the Dead Sea. So I'm in the cave, no food and water, just a fire going to keep the wild animals away. And suddenly I start hearing these animals with bells, but there's no animal. There shouldn't be any animals. There shouldn't be sheep or goats or anything. And then, as I write in my book, Into the Nothing, Abraham appears. Now, mystically, you have to look at a person's foot. Is this just a demon? I mean, there's a few things you check out. As I say, I've been trained with some very, very intense rabbis in those areas. But it's Abraham. And he transmitted to me his energy of love. I mean, he was there for about 30 seconds. I mean, I didn't time it, obviously, you know. But he transferred the energy of love, and also the energy of his sense of connectedness to all of humanity. And it was very profound. It was a real apparition, so to speak. So I had another a major initiation up in the hills all by myself, overlooking the Dead Sea. So that's something that was very special. That was like my initiation into Israel, the real Aliyah, because they don't really have a real Aliyah initiation per se, a spiritual initiation.
I'm sorry, I wanted to ask a meditation question of you. Meditation is part of Kabbalah, but it seems to me that you bring a lot of other aspects of meditation. For you, what's different about Jewish meditation? You know, talking about into the nothing and moving into that kind of state that requires intense meditation.
It's a really good question. I'm not as focused on Kabbalah as I am on Hashem.
Sure.
I want to make the difference. One is metaphysical. To me, it's merging into the nothing. If we look at their sheet, it's talking about the nothing. It's talking about something coming out of the nothing. So the primarily we start with nothing becoming something. Bereshit bara. If that's making sense.
Sure.
And so me, the tradition of Abraham meditating in the fields, Yitzhak,
contemplating in the afternoon, right before he meets Rivka, right. Yeah.
Right, and Yaakov in the evening, you know, that's how you get the three prayers. That's where I'm coming from. So it isn't a Kabbalistic meditation. Now, that being said, so I am linked energetically, I'll just put it that way, to that level, to level of Abraham. Okay, the original Jew, the original meditator, the original one God, both inside and out. Okay, so that's part of it. But in 1995, at the end of a 21-day water fast, a name of God, Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, came to me that said, this is the name that you must use when you're meditating. So I teach from that moment on people to repeat that name, and that's what would make it Jewish in that sense, to repeat that name of God to bring them into meditation. Mm-hmm. Second part, I was empowered in a variety of ways with the real Haniha, which is the transmission of energy. So when Moshe looked at Yehoshua, the energy went in him. Deuteronomy, I think, 39:4, something like that. And so I've been given that power to help awaken the Ruach HaKodesh in others as a result of all that's been I've been through. So that was like a gift, but it is very much Torah tradition when we really look at it. You know, and Moses did that with the elders, and they all had the rays of light in the letters above their head, that kind of thing.
Right, the Karnaim.
So there is in our tradition this tremendous spiritual, energetic tradition of the I use the word Ruach HaKodesh, I think is the closest description of the awakening of the Ruach HaKodesh as part of the spiritual life. Now, Shmika Meshefa, the traditional rabbi initiation is meant to be that. But I don't know if that's exactly the energetics anymore, if that's what I just said. You know, isn't that people don't get Shmika, but it's like, are they getting this energetic transmission that, as I describe in the book, that is spiritually, energetically awakening?
I want
to. So that's what's also been given to me. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I'm sorry we run out of time. You just kind of scratched the surface. I want to thank Gabriel Cousins for a great visit here on Too Jewish and his spiritual presence. The book is called Into the Nothing, a spiritual autobiography, one of 13 or 14 books he has written. It's a fascinating read. And Gabriel, thank you. Where can people go to find out more about you, even in Israel?
Well, drcousins.com. I have a whole network here in Israel. I've been coming here for years. So, but it's just simple, drcousins.com. And that will take people to where they have to go.
That'll get you everything you need. Cousens. Thank you so much. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest and get a final musical play out.
And thank you, and blessings to you and to everyone who's listening.
Thank you.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun, a place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol, the best games in town, amazing dining, and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball, Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week. Our guest will be Dr. Mark Klein, author of the new and very unusual book, Franklin Rock. More about that next week. Our playout this morning comes for the upcoming Festival of Purim, Thursday night and Friday. Join Congregation Beit Simcha for our great Purim celebration, 6:30 p.m. Thursday night on Facebook Live on our Facebook page, Beit Simcha Tucson. The playout is a Purim medley from Israel, Yitzchak Eshel and his youth choir. My friends, may you have a Chag Purim Sameach, a happy holiday of Purim, a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of health and of peace.
שושנת יעקב צהלה ושמחה לראותם יחד חלת מרדכי שושנת יעקב צהלה ושמחה לראותם יחד חלת מרדכי תשועתם מאירת לנצח בתקוותם בכל דור ודור ברוך מרדכי שמחה וססון ויקר ליהודים ליהודים הייתה אורה אורה ושמחה וססון ויקר כן 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 תהיה כן תהיה לנו אורה ושמחה וססון ויקר כן 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 תהיה כן תהיה לנו אורה ושמחה וססון ויקר כן 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 תהיה כן תהיה לנו אורה ושמחה וססון
לסתר לה 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 חוזר כל אחד מאיתנו עם מלכת אסתר לה 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 לה
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.